Today is May 30th, 2007. I'm David Berlin, and this is ZDNet's IT Matters. First, a word from our sponsor.
ZDNet, the biggest voice in business technology.
You're listening to ZDNet's IT Matters. I'm David Berlin. For several years now, Google has been making waves in the application community by offering what is normally considered to be desktop functionality, but in a browser, with the application logic being served from Google's web servers. Word processing and spreadsheets come to mind, but those aren't the only apps that Google likes to serve up. Critics of the browser-based approach, where computing is essentially done on the internet, or in the cloud, as some like to say, have argued that the approach is a non-starter for one very big reason. If you lose your connectivity to the internet, you lose access to your applications and data. They call it the offline problem, in a move that could very well silence those critics, forcing them to seek some other ground on which to vault their beloved desktop apps. Google is open sourcing a new technology designed to turn the offline problem into a problem of the past. Here to tell me about it is Google's Director of Engineering, Linus Upson. Mr. Upson, thank you very much for joining me on ZDNet's IT Matters.
Good to be here.
So you've got your big developer day coming up here, and of course, when any company that's in the development community has a developer day, there's usually a round of announcements. So what's the big news this week?
So one of the big announcements we're having at Developer Day is something we call Google Gears. It's a browser extension we're releasing as an open source project as well that gives offline capabilities to web applications.
And this has been a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and there are a couple different ways that this is already being done. Can you go into any sort of detail on just exactly what the architecture is like? And you mentioned that it's a browser extension, so is it an extension to both Internet Explorer and Firefox, or just one of them?
So Google Gears, in its initial release, supports all the major browsers on all the major platforms. So that means Internet Explorer on Windows, Firefox on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and soon Safari, and we're also working very closely with the Opera folks and hope to make it available there soon as well.
Okay, so that's pretty exciting. Total coverage. How do you accomplish this feat across so many different browsers when they all have different architecture?
Well, I mean, there's integration challenges with each browser, but ultimately what we want to achieve with this is to have an open standard that just comes baked in with all of the browsers. And the standards process, as you know, can take a long time.
Forever.
But this is something and a capability that a lot of people have been asking for, and certainly the users of Google applications have been asking for it. So we're trying to find the best, fastest way that we can get to a broad industry standard that everyone can support and that all application developers can use and have a single API. And to that end, we're working with a number of industry partners, and today we're announcing that we've been working with Mozilla, Adobe, and Opera. And what we're going to do is jumpstart that process by releasing all the work we've done with this Google Gears extension as open source. But the goal at the end of the day is to have a single industry standard that all of the browser vendors can adopt and that all web developers can use.
What's the underlying technology? The best example I've seen of offline capability so far has been based on the Derby project under Apache based on Sun's JavaDB technology. And that's sort of where you've got Java Virtual Machine and the database can act as sort of a repository, and you can also make J2SE calls to leverage the local storage space on whatever machine you're running as a repository as well, as a physical repository. So is this architecture fundamentally different from that?
So the approach that we're taking and the vision that we share with our partners is to essentially build on the successful Ajax programming model, which means that you build your application using a combination of JavaScript, XML, HTML, CSS, and all of the other resources that go into building web applications. So the approach we're taking with Gears is essentially just to add a very small number of new JavaScript APIs that are surfaced via this extension and hopefully will just be part of every browser that Ajax developers can use. And there are three major components, three major APIs that we're exposing via Gears. The first is something we call local server. So it's not really a full-fledged web server, but it allows the browser to be able to display and fetch resources locally. So that means when the network isn't there, it'll be able to serve URL requests from within the browser itself. And it also has the capability to essentially capture all of the resources, the JavaScript and HTML, that make up the code that is the application. So this is the first piece that you need to be able to work when disconnected, is simply so that when a user types in a URL or clicks on a bookmark or the application itself requests various URL resources, that we can serve it up to the rest of the browser.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first piece. The second piece is a local database, because running offline doesn't do much good unless you actually have a rich data model that you can present interesting information to the user. And to that end, we didn't want to reinvent the wheel, so we actually use an existing open source project called SQLite. It's been amazingly popular in the mobile and embedded device community because it's a full-fledged SQL database that's tiny. It's about 250K, but it has a very, very rich feature set, and it's very fast. And so what we did was we took this existing open source database and exposed it via some new JavaScript APIs to JavaScript developers. But of course, being Google, simply being able to do SQL queries wasn't enough. We needed to have full text search capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've been doing, and actually people who've been paying attention to the SQLite.org website and their CVS repository where all the code is stored, a number of Google folks have been donating full text indexing capability and building that into the SQLite database. And so that's the second major component to building offline applications that's exposed via Gears.
And a version of this database runs on all the major platforms?
Yeah, SQLite runs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're running on a small subset of what they support. They support all kinds of crazy embedded devices, and it's been ported to every environment you could possibly imagine.
Okay.
So the third major piece of what we're doing is perhaps the most subtle, but one of the most important to the model that we want to offline applications to work in. And what we're doing is we're introducing the ability for JavaScript to run in a background thread. And it's something we call worker pool. The problem is all the major browsers today are essentially single-threaded, so poorly behaving JavaScript can lock up your entire browser. And I think many people who've gone to various websites have experienced this in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be synchronizing a large amount of data and doing complex database transactions and things like that, you don't want to be locking up the browser while that happens. So we introduced the capability for people to run JavaScript on this background thread and send messages back and forth to the rest of the browser so that you can do complex database operations without slowing the user down at all. So those are the three major pieces that go into Google Gears, and the three major pieces that we found from our application development are really important to building offline web applications.
So a few questions on each of those three pieces. On the local server side, what I didn't hear was that you were using the SQLite database as to emulate some form of like hard drive persistence. So where would the code itself persist? You have a web server, and I'm assuming that what you mean by that is like something that can actually serve up HTTP. But where would the actual files themselves, like the HTML files, JavaScript files, be stored?
So all the HTML files, JavaScript files, are stored on the user's local disk.
Mm-hmm.
And just as with the database, they're all sandboxed so that each website can only access its resources and nobody else's. Uses an even more restrictive security model than the browser itself implements.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what I was going
to
ask.
Just to be clear, we're not actually running a separate web server on your computer. We call it local server because that's the function it performs.
Mm-hmm.
But really what it does is it plugs into the various browsers to intercept HTTP requests and then just serve them up within the browser itself.
Right.
So it never has to leave the browser and access a separate server, things like that. It's just we're basically teaching the browser how to service requests without going to the network.
And there's a separate sandbox per site, you just said.
Exactly.
That's very interesting. And in terms of the database, same thing. A separate instance of the database per site or one database? How are you doing that?
Each site has its own little database.
Okay.
But it's very, very lightweight, and you basically only pay the expense of the ones that you're actually using.
What about the management of all this? You know, so you go to some site, use its offline capabilities, don't come back for another year or so. Is there some sort of like cookie-like architecture where the databases expire eventually, or you can manage it? How does that work?
Yeah, it's very similar to cookies in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Although we want to make sure we don't actually throw users' data away when they don't want it to go away.
Right.
What we've done here in this early developer release is make it so that the user has to opt in to any site who wants to use offline capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And what we imagine will ultimately happen once we do a broad consumer release of this, or it becomes a standard that's built into every browser, is that sites can use some small amount of resource without having to bother the user. But if they want to store a significant amount of data, they have to ask the user's permission to do that. And of course, at any given point in time, the user should be able to go in and clear out stuff that they don't want or have it automatically done for them if they don't use it for an extended period.
And will they be able, just like with some cookie browser, so to say, be able to go in and pick specific things to take off if it's taking up disk space or something like that? Or
yeah, they'll be able to say, I don't want this site anymore, make it go away.
Mm-hmm. Or what about specific, even more granular than that?
Well, that gets a little bit tricky because you don't want to take away part of an application.
Right.
And so depending on how the application itself decides to store data, it might not make sense to remove part of its data. You could really confuse the application. So we're pretty much leaving that up to a combination of the application developer and the user. And a user can basically decide, I don't want this application anymore. And then the application might offer user interface to the user to say what they want synchronized on the computer and what they don't. So they might only want a piece of their data from the cloud synchronized down to their local machine and not necessarily everything.
And then,
but that's
course,
something that's very application specific.
And then, of course, to the extent that it's open source, there's plenty of room for other companies who see a need that's not satisfied here to come along and innovate on top of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And ultimately, what we want to achieve here is to have one standard API that all developers can program against, including us.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're releasing as part of Google Developer Day, we see as something that's very early, very experimental, and we really want to engage with both the platform developers as well as the web application developers to make sure we eventually arrive at a standard that's good. I think many standards have been created before any applications have been built on top of them, and generally those don't tend to work out so well.
Big question when it comes to usability will be switching back and forth between cloud-based and local-based computing. Will it happen dynamically, or does the user have to actively say, take me offline now because I can't get to the cloud?
So that's actually one of the really neat things that the engineering team that built this has managed to accomplish. We want it to be possible to build web applications that can seamlessly transition from being connected to disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So by using these three components I described, essentially applications can always run against their local data, but in the background be quietly synchronizing with the cloud so that while you're connected, your data is completely fresh, but you never have to wait on the network, you never have to wait on the server. The data just trickles down or trickles up as you work. And then when you pull the cable and go away, or if you're on a mobile device or something like that and you go out of coverage, you can continue interacting with the latest data that you have. And then you come back into coverage, it just synchronizes up and you can keep working with even fresher data.
Mm, sounds very much like the way Zimbra is currently working with their offline capability.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're rolling out these big APIs. You're going to want to demonstrate how powerful they are. So are they going to be... are there going to be any demonstrations using, let's say, some of the existing Google applications?
So on Developer Day, we're launching Google Reader with offline capabilities. It is a real application that people can use, and it's something that overlaps pretty strongly with the developer community.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that'd be a great sample application for people to take a look at and see what's possible.
And we're talking about the RSS reader.
The RSS blog reader.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's terrific. Any other ones? Because obviously you can think of the word processor, the spreadsheet, some of the other applications that you're running.
Yeah, clearly we're very interested in offline enabling all of the interesting Google applications.
Mm-hmm.
However, we really want this to be a developer-focused release.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still at the experimental stage, and we want to get feedback from the broader community. And we know this is going to evolve and change as we learn. I think we've done some clever things here. We've probably done some things that aren't so clever. And so we want to be able to change how this works and evolve it over time based on the partners that we're working with and the web developer community.
We want to
have a real application, but we didn't want to go beyond the developer community at this stage.
Any specific third-party developers that you've predisclosed on this and are working on their own stuff that's going to use the APIs? I'm thinking, for example, of Matt Mullenweg over at WordPress. Some of the popular applications, particularly the blogging ones, that could benefit from this sort of architecture. Is there a chance that they'll be co-launching something on the same day?
So we've talked with a number of people in the industry, many of it confidentially. And the only ones I can talk about today are Adobe, Mozilla, and Opera.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd really like to see a lot of different companies out there working on this long term.
Well, going back to those three parties, the partners, I should say, clearly the role of Mozilla and Opera you can figure out. But what is Adobe doing?
So they're going to be making some announcements tomorrow at Google Developer Day,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to scoop what they have to say.
Steal their thunder, no.
But they're doing, they're very involved in web development, as you know, and they share our vision of being able to run while disconnected, mm-hmm. as well as when you're poorly connected. And we share the same vision of wanting to have a single standard API for doing these kinds of things.
So chances are we'll see the classes for that API built into their developer kit, the Apollo stuff that's out right now.
I'll leave it for them to make any announcement.
We'll take a guess there. We'll take a wild guess. What about the open source nature of this? What license are you guys going to release it under?
So all of this is being released under the new BSD license.
Mm-hmm.
In talking with our partners, particularly the folks at Mozilla who have far more experience than we do at running open source projects and dealing with open web standards, we've looked to them for guidance on how to best do this to accelerate the process in the best way possible. And so we chose a license that's compatible with what they're doing, but is also compatible with commercial vendors mm-hmm. and being able to build things into their product. And also looking to them for guidance on how to work through the standards process and things like that. And we're going to be working with the What working group, which a lot of the browser vendors have been working with in recent years.
Mm-hmm. You said that you didn't want to reinvent the wheel, but to some extent, some of this work was being done using, as I mentioned earlier, using Derby, which is under the Apache project, and JavaDB, the Sun's version of Derby. Why did you not pick that infrastructure, and why did you go with the one that you went with?
So I think it's good that there's a lot of stuff going on in this space. I mean, it's a big problem, and people are coming at it from a number of different angles, and we'll see how it plays out as to what are the strengths and weaknesses of each one. From our perspective, from Google's perspective, we build Ajax applications that run in the browser. And so we have a lot of very sophisticated JavaScript and DHTML developers here. And so we took an approach that was very Ajax-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can do the work in JavaScript. You can continue writing Ajax apps the way you always have, so you don't change the architecture of existing Ajax applications. But you give Ajax developers, JavaScript developers, just a few, sort of the minimal number of small APIs in addition to what they already have to be able to build offline applications. So that's how we got to where we were with this.
When I look at the way some of those other implementations of offline applications have been implemented, there has been some implication in terms of system requirements. What do you imagine would be the implications in terms of system requirements of this particular architecture? Do you think existing systems are going to need another meg of memory, half a meg? What do you think on that?
So the nice thing about the approach we're taking is it takes essentially zero additional resources when you're not using it, because mm-hmm. there's no additional processes that run. None of that happens. The additional resources you need depend on what the applications want to do.
Right.
So in other words, you can do something very lightweight, note taker, task lists, things like that, that essentially consume zero additional resources. It's so small extra that it's not even worth counting.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can imagine people building much richer applications, say one that might want to synchronize gigabytes of email.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly if you're going to be syncing down gigs of mail, then you're going to need to allocate disk space for that. But
right.
Fortunately, you tend not to get gigs of mail per day. So the incremental resource that you get as they use this also tends to be very small.
Right, but there could be some big applications. I'm thinking like Salesforce.com. They do a lot of, you could do a lot of back and forth passing of forms and even attachments. I'm not sure how that would be handled, but there are some heavier weight enterprise applications that could be a little more demanding on the resources of the local system, yes?
Yeah, clearly people can build big, robust applications that consume more resources, but it's not going to be dramatically more than what existing Ajax applications do today.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the only thing we're doing is we're taking up a little additional disk space.
What about in terms of multimedia when you pull that into the equation, though? I mean, if, for example, you've got some sort of uploader to a video site like YouTube, and that's, of course, a Google property, or Flickr, and you're uploading images to Flickr, in those cases, you don't have access to the cloud, but you have local things that you need to attach. How would that work?
So, this is clearly a problem we've thought about, and there's APIs in Gears to be able to handle uploading.
Mm-hmm.
It's still fairly primitive, but we'd like to continue to see that improve as well.
So does that imply that if you're one of the companies running a service to which things are uploaded, you're going to have to kind of change gears and maybe reset yourself to support this standard if it becomes its standard?
Well, it depends on what you want to do. If you're using the Gears APIs to be able to write offline-capable web applications, clearly one of the APIs you need is to be able to accept uploads or attachments or things like that while you're disconnected. And so we provide APIs for people to do that. But the approach we're taking with this is really you know, we know about what the Google applications need to be able to work while disconnected. Mm-hmm. And so those are the features that we've added to Gears. But now as we go out to the broader developer community, I'm sure we're going to get feedback from people that says, you know, hey, we need this feature, or the way you implemented this is causing me some trouble. We should change it to do it this other way. And that's exactly the kind of dialogue we want to get into so that we can make something that's really good.
You just brought up a good point, which is that there's got to be, especially in terms of synchronization, there must be a server-side component to the synchronization. Is that open-sourced as well?
So Google Gears itself is pure client software. Mm-hmm. Everything is open-source, no strings whatsoever to Google or any Google service. It just provides the primitives you need to build the higher-level functions like synchronization.
I see.
And from our experience building applications, every application's synchronization needs are different. And the way they present it to users, the way they handle conflicts, all this other stuff is very different. And, you know, we don't presume to offer a generic synchronization framework or a synchronization service or things like that. I think some of those things will appear built on top of these primitives. Mm-hmm. But what we're really looking at is there's some fundamental capabilities that were missing in the browser that we needed for our applications. Let's go address those fundamental capabilities.
So I guess, Mr. Upson, the one question I have is, what didn't I ask that would be relevant to the developers and the other members of ZDNet's audience? I think I've asked anything I can think of, but I want to make sure I don't leave anything out there.
I think you've covered all the bases. Mm-hmm. From our perspective, ultimately what we want and where we're coming from is we want great web applications. And the partners we're working with have exactly the same vision, and we're all driving towards the same goal. And so we're just trying to be as open and transparent as possible in what we do, making all of our work available completely as open source, working with existing standards communities and standards bodies, and working with the other major players in the space, and engaging with all the web developers to make sure we ultimately emerge with a great standard that allows people to build great applications and we end up with happy users.
Well, I wish you luck on Developer Day. Where can ZDNet's audience members go to find out more information about Google Gears?
Pretty simple. It's just gears.google.com.
Mr. Upson, thank you very much for joining me on ZDNet's IT Matters. Good luck with the launch.
Thanks.
You've been listening to ZDNet's IT Matters. For more thought-provoking podcast interviews, be sure to visit podcasts.zdnet.com. For ZDNet, I'm David Berlin.